Cuban-American novelist Oscar Huelos died this weekend at the age of 62. His book, The Mambo Kings Play Songs of Love, was a bestseller and earned him the Pulitzer Prize for Fiction in 1990, making him the first Hispanic to earn that prize. So we remember Oscar Huelos this morning. I spoke with him on the book show in 2010 on the occasion of the publication of Beautiful Maria of My Soul, a follow-up to Mambo Kings. We began the conversation by speaking about his personal fondness for his Pulitzer Prize-winning piece.
It was a novel written out of sort of a rambunctious ignorance about how hard novels are to write. My first novel, Our House in the Last World, was very gritty indeed, but a little formal in its format. And I actually never thought that Mambo Kings would be published, so I had great freedom while writing it. And along the way, I also experimented. I always like to compare it to a pianist first fooling around with jazz and then getting carried away. And that's how I saw the composition of the novel in general. Very musically and of course, atmospheric and a lot of emotions coming and going all kinds of directions. I could not, for the life of me, write that book today.
Why?
Because it's a younger person's book. It's just filled with so much energy and explosive scenes. It was as if I were discovering all kinds of modes of memory while writing the book. And in fact, while I was writing Mambo Kings, I started having all these sort of insights into what life in Cuba must have been like at a certain point. And as well, I wrote part of that book while I was living in Italy and also going through that sort of when someone says to you in a foreign language, abra la ventana, open that window, or, apire, la finestra, you're so thrilled to be understanding it that you instantly obey. So I found myself reeling with feelings of being in another culture and at the same time gaining insight into, say, what folks of the Mambo Kings generation, a.k.a. my father's and mother's generation, went through when they first came to the United States in the 1940s and 50s. And really, in a way, the Mambo Kings was an homage to them and also to the, vitality they brought to American culture.
That book had such passion. It was really amazing.
Well, I spent a lot of time alone when I was writing it. so naturally, I love music so much and I love musicians. I was in Miami last night and it was a dead end night, this hotel, and in Coral Gables, and there was a pianist and he was playing some kind of mood music from the 70s, American mood music. So I asked him if he could play some Cuban music, and of course he was a Cuban from Havana, transplanted 2 years in Miami, and he started playing all this beautiful music, and we started talking, and it was just like I felt like I was inside a chapter of the Mambo Kings. It was just so comfortable to me. As I said, I love music, I love musicians, and I think a lot of that went into the book. As well, some people have commented that the Mambo Kings Play Songs of Love has a little bit of saucy sex in it. I always say to some folks who have objected to it is that they don't object when they're hearing a jazz, nice ballad, or bolero in the jazz mode with minor chords, and suddenly a raunchy saxophone comes in playing this sort of wild lead. And that's how I intended the passion in the book, at least sexually speaking. But in terms of the imagination, I intended the love scenes to really evoke, I think, a longing that the characters had, and in particular one, Nestor Castillo, had for a woman named Maria back in Cuba. But in a way, his longings were really about, for her, were really about the longings that many a man or a woman who's left their home country for a new one feels, like a combination of homesickness and nostalgia and just longing, I guess, for youth.
So it has been 20 years since that novel came out, and you were exploring the character again in Beautiful Maria of My Soul. At what point during that 20 years did you think that this was possible, that you could revisit this character, this muse?
You know, it's very funny, Joe. I have actually met people who claim to have known the Castillo brothers, Nestor and Cesar Castillo. Like they'd say, you know, I remember seeing the Mambo Kings in Havana back in 1940-something, or I caught their act in New York, or whatever happened to them. I had a couple of their recordings, but they kind of disappeared, right? When that novel came out, as you know, they appear on the I Love Lucy show as walk-on characters playing Ricky Cousins. I used to get letters from people saying they remember the episode, but they haven't seen it in a long time. I kept getting this sort of feedback, you know, not always, but often enough that I kept thinking, I think these guys are for real, and they really do exist. And once I got into that kind of mode of thought, I started thinking about Maria and her story. And in fact, I always thought part of the plot line in the novel Beautiful Maria of My Soul, I had originally intended for the Mambo Kings, but it would have made the book too long and too unwieldy. And in fact, Maria would have emerged so much as a major character that she would have not have been this sort of conceit or this notion or this piece of melody that one remembers, you know, through this beautiful kind of gauze of memory, but rather a real full-blown character. And I think it would have thrown the sort of lyricism of that dream off for the Mambo Kings, at least. But between this notion that people I've met have claimed to have seen these guys and heard them, and between feeling that Maria was a very real person, I began to consider the plot that I had sort of set aside for a book. Although I have to say that 20 years is a long time, so I think more than a few of my original fans are off somewhere and on vacation. But it's nice to get a chance to at least introduce that world again to younger readers.
This is very much, I mean, obviously not a sequel, but a companion. It allows you to explore ground that perhaps, I mean, obviously the reader was interested in and you were interested in exploring as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there were some loose ends I wanted to tie together. You know, in the novel, The Mambo Kings, Nestor mysteriously, you know, he's always longing for this woman back in Cuba, but we only know her as this sort of incredibly sexy, saucy, passionate woman who, during the time of their courtship, always seems preoccupied about something else. And so at least in Beautiful Maria of My Soul, I was able to flesh the hidden thoughts that she had out and, in fact, give her own entire history, a history that I think, at least in some ways, reflects what happened to a lot of Cubans after the introduction of Fidel Castro's government, which forced people who, I guess, would never have dreamed of leaving home, forced them to leave. And sorry for that mangled syntax. but in effect, I think her story is a universal story. And the more I began thinking about it, the more it became, I guess, pertinent to what's going on today. Cubans are still, a generation of Cubans are still longing to see a real change come over the island, and yet younger generations have sort of become accustomed to life in the United States. So the same urgency doesn't exist, except for those who continue to live in this other, you know, this old-fashioned world where, you know, boleros and that kind of lyricism still counts.
We're speaking with Oscar Huelos, the new book, Beautiful Maria of My Soul, published by Hyperion. There are reflections in the book by Maria, who is now some 60 years old. Was it fun to explore her aging?
I wouldn't call it fun, but here's the kicker. I mean, it sort of has a symmetry with Mambo Kings in the sense that Cesar Castillo, the older brother, is 62 as the Mambo Kings story is sort of being told. I mean, that tale is filtered through his nephew, Eugenio, and also through a general omniscient narrator as well as through his own memories. But I remember, you know, I read now the lines, being 58, I read the lines, you know, he's 62 years old. He's so old. My God, you know, young man one day, old man next day is the way I put it in the Mambo Kings. And actually, I don't think it's that old now. But when you're in your 30s, which was my age as I was writing the Mambo Kings, it seems an infinity away. So coming to Maria, I realized, you know, as I said, holy, you know, damn. So let's make it, you know, she is a parallel with Cesar, and she's looking back in a way. And but I wouldn't say that I took a great pleasure in noting the way she was aging, except in the sense that I sort of, indeed, I grew up with some rather saucy Cuban women who, you know, longtime residents of the United States, but who, as they got older, refused or could not or were incapable of letting go of this central self-image they had, you know, of themselves. I mean, you know, when an 85-year-old woman asks you, do you think I'm getting older? You know, my response would be, no, you look great, you know, and but you're not. And in her mind, she isn't. You know, to digress, Norman Mailer once came up to me, and, you know, we were standing outside a brownstone somewhere, and he's, you know, getting on. And he said to me, you know, the crazy thing is that, you know, you feel the same inside, you think the same, your mind feels eternally young, but then you look in the mirror and you say, who is that? You know? And I think that someone like Maria, when she looks in the mirror, she's not very disappointed, you know. But again, she's not turning as many heads as she used to. So there are elements of vanity and aging that I think I ended up exploring, although I like her so much that I don't really hold it against her.
You talk about the mirror, and I actually made a note when I was reading it because I love the sentence where you have her in front of the mirror, and she's drop-dead gorgeous, and you write, if that mirror were a man, it would have been salivating. If it were a carpet, it would have taken flight. If it had been a pile of wood, it would have burst into flame.
Yeah, I like that. I felt that, and that's the short version.
Yes.
My original went on and on into, like, you know, if it were a forest, it would have turned into a redwood, you know? she was a muse for me as much as she was for Nestor Castillo in the book. And one of the fun things I did in that novel was just sort of talk about how the song, you know, it's not a central thing, but how the song was sort of written. And I think the book, in a way, is about creativity in general, though I wouldn't put any, you know, giant exclamation points after that or, you know, make a big deal out of it. But it has its moments. And there's a lot of stuff going on with mirrors in the novel, which I think have to do with, I guess, a little bit of vanity, and also the superficiality of looks, in a way. But in Maria's case, they also make her immortal, which is what I think everyone, you know, wants.
In the novel, you have this backdrop of revolution, and certainly there is a great historical storyline here as well. There is history that you wanted to explore with these characters.
Yeah, but I did not want it to dwell too much on the revolution, for example.
Right.
Even though as a subject deserves, you know, many books, which is that it has had. But in the context of the way I think people remember events, I think the revolution's existence in the novel sort of reflects the way a woman thinking about a former love, for example, would have it, which is something that happened that swept her up, that took her away, but nothing that she, in a particular moment, given the kind of memory, a specific kind of memory, would be, you know, dwelling upon too much. So to me, one of the hardest things about the novel was to establish the proportions of, you know, values. Of course, the Cuban Revolution was super important to generations of Cubans. Of course, it's what led her to eventually end up in Miami. But did I think it appropriate to the sort of balance of the composition to spend 50 pages with it? I don't think so. And in fact, I have a few anecdotes that I think are kind of funny about Fidel Castro which sort of just indicate with just a portion of what happened in those times. You know, Russians driving along and Castro's fellows, guerrillas driving along in Russian jeeps, and you know, just give a sense of, you know, what's going on. I think that is what you meant by a, you know, sort of suggestion of the backdrop of the revolution.
Right.
I think if I had got, you know, pushed it further, it would have become an entirely different kind of book.
So the reader is going along in the novel, and then you show up.
Yes, I do. well,
I'm curious as to how that came into the equation.
You know, it's going back to that central notion I had about, Cesar Castillo is obviously a very real person. I mean, I have to say I've met a number of people who claim to have known him, to have met him, including a famous Cuban performer who recently passed away, Cuban Pete. And he said, whatever happened to those guys? Along the way, I always wondered about whatever happened to that guy, Iuelos, who wrote the book. And in fact, I felt like I had known and met various Marias in my life. As an author, I mean, you can't, number of people I've met at readings and lectures I've given who, you know, seem amazingly familiar to me are innumerable, particularly Cubans. I mean, they are so friendly and also demanding at the same time occasionally, but for the most part, you know, very affectionate. Last night in Miami, for example, I stumbled upon this Tangle studio, and the woman there, you know, as soon as she found out that this Americanized New York Cuban guy was, in fact, had parents who were from Oriente, she kept referring to me as a paisano, you know. And nothing does my heart, warms my heart more. And in fact, I, you know, in terms of that world, I felt that I had to become a part of it, but in a way, I feel that the fiction that I write about is very real. And I ended up, to be honest, Joe, I don't know what on earth I'm doing in that novel. The devil made me do it. But I had, you know, I wanted people to know there's a real, you know, there's a real author out there, and somehow in the capricious ways of writing books, he became involved in this real story.
A 2010 conversation with Oscar Huelos. The Pulitzer Prize-winning novelist died of a heart attack this past Saturday. He was 62 years old. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.